From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, the 38th installment of our conversations with Professor Luciana Bohn about the history of the Soviet Union. And we come into the maybe one of the most important events of that history, with perhaps a single event that set the course toward self-destruction into play. It took perhaps 30 to 35 years for it to completely actualize. But this is the so-called secret speech by Nikita Khrushchev in 1956 to the Communist Party of the Soviet Union.
So, we decided to talk about Nikita Khrushchev's secret report to the CPSU. And I'll start. With usual preambles. So in the West, we have followed for 90 years a kind of dominant anti-Stalin paradigm. And the question is, where does it come from? How did it arise? How did it develop? What did it lead to? In essence, the anti-Stalin paradigm served the West very well to attack the Soviet Union and socialism because it portrayed Stalin as the monster. And so, so he's depicted as a monster, and by this paradigm could only function. That is, that this monster could only function in a nation of stupid robots. So all socialists are robots, and they were ruled by a monster. So over almost 90 years, the political discourse in the West has been saturated by attacks against Stalin. The attacks took off from the many books by Leon Trotsky, who accused Stalin of having betrayed the revolution.
Right.
After the Second World War came the Cold War, which was intellectually driven or guided by Hannah Arendt's book on totalitarianism, where she presented the idea that Stalin and Hitler were twins, evil twins, who constructed totalitarian empires. Hannah Arendt's book, I think, Totalitarianism, came after the 1956 speech that we are about to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
Because the most devastating attack of all on Stalin naturally came from the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, whose leader at the time was Nikita Khrushchev.
Yep.
In his so-called secret report to the 20th Congress of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union,
right,
in 1956. And I just want to say,
right,
what happened. I think the Congress opened on the 12th of February, and the secret report took place on the 25th of February. The opening speech by Khrushchev, to which the Soviet delegates as well as international delegates were present and invited. That speech, of the opening speech, took 7 hours. But what people noted, that is, representative of the Communist Party and delegates of the world, Communist Party of the world, noticed that there were no pictures of Stalin in the whole. And in that speech, he presented some ideological novelties that I will get to later, but among them was the idea that the class struggle was over, and that that the West and the East should live in peace, etc. There was, even in the seven-hour speech, an ideological turnaround. But we're going. But the secret report that was at the conclusion of the Congress, which was the night between 24th and 25th, to which only the Soviet delegates were invited, and which took 4 hours, and this. There is a little, I can't quite determine whether the foreign delegates were invited or not. All I know is that they were eventually read the speech, but not given copies. But there is a bit of dispute over this. I haven't checked very thoroughly. At any rate, there was a great deal of hush-hush about it. And in fact, the State Department, the CIA got a hold of it, and the State Department or the New York Times or whoever published it in June of 1956. Yeah. That's the kind of, you know, factual background.
Yeah.
In this secret report, which apparently he had consulted other members, he accused Stalin of having established a cult of personality, of having persecuted unjustly thousands of innocent communists. He never really mentioned how many, but those who followed did. Those who followed him and his report. Now, except for the Chinese Communist Party, the Albanian Communist Party, the Greek and Portuguese Communist Parties, every other Communist Party of the world accepted and adopted this vision of Stalin by Khrushchev.
Because it came from Moscow. That's really the reality
because
of it.
Exactly.
It came from Moscow. That was the authoritative center of the global
of
revolution.
Of communism.
Yep, of the communist global communist revolution. And
the cradle of the socialist, the communist revolution.
That's right.
It came from Moscow. And as we said before, Khrushchev had not consulted with any of the secretaries of the parties, of the world communist parties. This was done without consulting any of the fraternal parties, as Mao pointed out and we mentioned last week.
And the real irony here is this. The reason that the Soviet, you know, that Moscow, the Soviet Union, is the center generally of the global communist movement is that it's the first successful communist revolution that has been constructing communism and
yes.
is a global power and is offering assistance to others in doing, you know, performing that task around the world. In other words, the deeds of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union place it at the center of the global communist movement. This primarily happens, if you're talking about the period from 1917 until 1956, you know, that's 40 years, 39 years, the bulk of that was while Stalin was at the head of the Soviet leadership. The critique that is brought against Stalin and against the party during that period of time, and really against the entire society, is that it was behaving exactly in the way that Trotsky had said it was behaving back in almost 1905. That wasn't mm-hmm. true, that this distorted monster that was being constructed of bureaucrats and all kinds of other evils that were anti-revolutionary and anti-worker, that this thing had placed the Soviet Union at the center of the leadership of the communist movement, and it was now being denounced under the same terms that its enemies had denounced it all the way up to that point, and now from a position of authority.
That's right. Now, just let's take a look at what 1956 means. Not only By the way, I have to add that he was very careful. Khrushchev was very careful to say that the deformation, the monstrosity that Stalin had created, was not due to the Bolshevik Revolution or the Bolsheviks. In other words, all right. This started with Stalin. But as you point out, though Khrushchev seemed to defend the Leninist revolution, the Bolshevik Leninist revolution, by even saying that the class struggle was over.
Right.
That was anti-Stalinist.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, this is what Trotsky right. did that too. As soon as Lenin died, suddenly Lenin mm-hmm. Lenin
he
was
became
was
a Leninist.
God. Yeah, he became a Leninist. When Lenin
or
was alive,
Leninist.
He was yeah, exactly. And when Lenin was alive, Lenin was the enemy, and
right.
and or overstating himself, and or cult of personality, and or you know whatever other evil that can impute to Lenin and really to the society. Khrushchev was forced, of course, to do exactly what you said, because if he says. All of these things I just mentioned are true, and consequently, the child of this behavior is illegitimate. People will say, then why am I listening to you? Because you are that child. And so what he had to do was, on the one hand, kill his parents. On the other hand, say, I am not, and never have been, an orphan.
That's right. Yeah. And if we look at 1956, let's see what the global situation is. We have just concluded in 1954, that is, Indochina has just, which, you know, Vietnam, just kicked France out. The Algerian independence movement is beginning. The Korean War ended, what, in 1952, 53?
Yeah.
Stalin helped, I mean, Russia, Soviet Union helped these independence movements.
That's right. And Bandung.
So not
and Bandung. You had
socialism constructed in one country, but
right.
that country was able to help independence movements to kick off the imperialist.
That's
the
right.
Western imperialist yoke.
And those forces were gathering. You had the Bandung Conference in 1955, essentially the beginning of the Third World Movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, in reality, just to remind what we've been discussing throughout this conversation, Stalin built the first socialist society and built it on the wreck left behind by imperialist intervention and civil war. He was responsible for ending Nazi imperialism, and in doing so, he preserved socialism and helped extend its foundations into Eastern Europe
right.
while it lasted.
Yep.
And it lasted until Khrushchev started this counter-revolution. He was the principal theoretician of socialism after the death of Lenin, and he guided the Soviet Union during the period of industrialization, of collectivization of agriculture, of the defense against the encirclement, the imperialist encirclement, and the fascist invasion. He guided the reconstruction after the devastation of the Second World War. But all of this is just thrown into the black hole of vilification with the anti-Stalin paradigm, which Khrushchev started in the secret report. Now, what he said so much, I mean, we're talking about 4 hours, so the litany of Khrushchev is familiar to all the West. They're educated into this. The litany goes like this. He was guided by a diffident, paranoid, pathological nature, a suspicious nature, and by an overwhelming desire for personal power. I'm just going to do the litany. So this is what people believe, and they, you know, all over the world who are not communists, they believe this. that he himself unleashed the bureaucratic violence that is against the leaders of the party. By the way, Khrushchev was on board at the time, and though he says that Stalin launched the bureaucratic violence, he was part of it, and he knows damn well that, and he knows very well that it wasn't a personal decision. In fact, in the case of Bukharin, Stalin was probably the most moderate of the people within the party who were asking for his condemnation. That he launched a mass repression and terror, especially against the leaders of the party, that he persecuted thousands and thousands of innocent persons. He never mentioned beyond thousands and thousands. He never mentioned the number. That Stalin violated socialist laws, legality, etc., and then instilled fear in the whole country. Khrushchev accused Stalin of assassinating Sergei Kirov, which was never proven. Even Gorbachev tried to find out and found nothing. Now, Sergei Kirov was personal friend of Stalin, and just to remind people, Sergei Kirov was the party secretary in Leningrad, and was a very close friend of Stalin, and was probably would, if anything happened to Stalin, or in an election, if Kirov was likely to be the next, you know, the person after Stalin. So I'm getting ahead of myself, sorry. Let me go on with the litany.
It's okay.
Khrushchev accused Stalin of assassinating Sergei Kirov, the popular party secretary of Leningrad, and the motive for killing Kirov was to use the killing of Kirov as an excuse to round up and eliminate all his political rivals in the party, and that the three Moscow trials and the military trial of Tukhachevsky were a farce. The indicted, he didn't say he didn't rehabilitate them. He didn't say they were innocent, but he said their death sentences were an error. So, in fact, almost. Those are only some of the charges. In addition, he, in his speech, not the secret speech, but the general speech, the seven-hour speech that opened the Congress, what Khrushchev said deviated from Marxist-Leninist ideology, because he sustained that, because he said that the class struggle, as I mentioned before, had ended in the Soviet Union, and generally he affirmed in the 20th Congress that after the taking power, class struggle had been overcome. Now, this is really an evaluation that disagrees with historical experiences,
right,
of the bourgeois revolution, of the Paris Commune, and conflicts with what Marx and Engels, Lenin and Stalin said.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I'm going on.
No,
I'm going on.
Because take the next 35 years up to 1991. Certainly, the class struggle did not end in the Soviet Union, because the workers' government was overthrown by the bourgeoisie.
That's right.
So,
he was doing it.
Right.
I mean, as saying
exactly
that the class struggle was over, his own class,
right,
which was a class, he was way back in 1939, in 1929, 28, 29, when the party was deciding which road to take to communism, to socialism, there were three possibilities: Trotsky's permanent revolution, Bukharin's or gradualism, you know, little by little, and Stalin's own proposal, very detailed, of the socialism in one country, starting with collectivization of agriculture, industrialization, defense of the state, and distribution of some of building of schools, you know, beginning to build socialism. So right. There were three possibility, and the one Bukharin sustained was the gradualist, the slow way, and also privatization, you know, some private, sort of a mixed social, so a kind of social democracy Bukharin was was advocating. Khrushchev, now, what happened with Gorbachev is the rehabilitation of Bukharin. So we have a line from, well, really from Trotsky through Khrushchev, the Cold War, to Gorbachev, to the dissolution of the Soviet Union. That goes straight from, I mean, and the core point, the core moment is this secret speech, secret report that Khrushchev made in 1956.
Right.
In fact, in saying that class struggle was over, I lost my outline.
In saying that the class struggle was over.
Whereas since we know that from the end of the Second World War, the United States and the other nation, the other capitalist nation, did everything they could in their power to increase the struggle against the Soviet Union, well, and even within internally, within the Soviet Union, which Khrushchev, in my view, and in view of many others, facilitated to promote its disintegration.
Well, and so, the obverse was true also. If you look at, for example, the internal developments in the United States in the post-war period, it is very difficult to come to the conclusion that the class war had ended in the United States. Anyone mentioned socialism or communism, they were in front of HUAC and or driven out of their jobs and or communities.
Purges.
Yeah. But right, they didn't call it a purge. They made it an illegal act, and there was a violation of the Smith Act or whatever. But it was clear on the entire global chessboard, from the games that were being played in Washington for domestic purposes in the United States and for the Western European countries where policy was being made in Washington, all the way across the globe where you had the entire shaping up of developments in the colonies with the anti-colonial movement rising and the Western colonial powers suppressing that. If that's not a class struggle, what is that?
What is it? That's right. So he wasn't an internationalist. He didn't, how can you say the class struggle is over at the same time that Algeria is rising up?
Right.
Vietnam has just kicked off France and is being tormented by the United States.
Right.
I mean,
Congo, Bandung, across the globe. We're 2 years away from a Cuban revolution. And by the way, we're a few months away from the first satellite of the planet Earth, the first successful orbiting of the Earth by a human structure, which came out of a socialist country. And in addition to that, in the backdrop from April of 1944 forward, you had the plan developing in Washington to drop, as soon as they had 250 atomic bombs, to bomb the Soviet Union into oblivion. That was not because they considered them an international threat as with the Germans, since they allied with the Soviet Union against the Germans, but rather the class character of the Soviet Union that was the driving force there, obviously. Yeah.
Now, to denounce, to say that the class struggle was over was practical treason.
Right.
I mean, it was treason to everything that he, that Marx and Lenin, Marxist-Leninist, the government of the Soviet Union had stood for.
Right. Well, it's being proclaimed from the center of the leadership of the class struggle. Okay.
This is unbelievable. And the imagine the rank and file, let's say in Italy, which I know best.
Right.
All of a sudden, the leader Sottogliatti, Palmiro Togliatti, the leader of the Italian Communist Party, was in Moscow, and he had to come back and sort of try to modify, you know, Khrushchev's position, but stood with it. This kind of compromise began that confused the rank and file. What? One minute you tell us that Stalin is the father of socialism and is our, you know, symbol, etc., and now you're telling us he's a criminal.
Right, and I mean, what all kinds of things float from that. This is the kind created the kind of ideological confusion that resulted in what they called Eurocommunism in the 60s and 70s.
Yep.
And the divisions, not just the first effect, of course, was to drive a major split down the middle, because you mentioned on one side you had the USSR and essentially the Warsaw Pact countries. On the other side, China, with half the population living under socialist government, was split off.
That speech was murder to communism.
Yep.
It fed division, confusion, cynicism, demoralization, and finally complacency. It brought disaster to the communist movement, to the world communist movement, and in the long run, to socialism in the Soviet Union.
Yep.
So now it was very hard to recover from this 1956 blow. In the 60s and 70s, the Khrushchev demonization, vilification of Stalin was followed by writers such as Robert Conquest, Roy Medvedev, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and others to mention.
Softer ones,
and
too,
they
the
enriched
and others.
The accusation of Khrushchev.
Yep.
And affirmed that the number of the victims of Stalin had been over 60 million people, and that not a single part of the Soviet life, not the ideology of science, of art, escaped the corrosive impact of Stalinism.
Yeah, that's right.
So in this way, anti-Stalinism transfigured itself, became anti-Sovietism.
And it was very successful in doing that, and remains so to this day in to a large degree. And we're going to pick it up here and explore this a little deeper next week, because it goes to the essence of this question. The moral authority of a global movement that demands economic justice for the entire human race was eroded and compromised severely by this public relations campaign, which is in essence what Khrushchev was leading.
A counter-revolution.
Okay, and which was the public relations campaign of a counter-revolution. That's correct. And what it did was enable all of the things that enabled the deconstruction of the socialist economies over time. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go back to that next week. So thank you very much, Luciana.
Very good. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.